John Kaplan, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist, a professional observer. He's documented the diverse lifestyles of young Americans, as well as torture survivors in West Africa, and he chronicled the last days of a woman dying of cancer. But when John was diagnosed with cancer himself, he was no longer an observer. On the outside looking in, he became the subject of his own documentary film titled Not As I Pictured, being shown on PBS stations nationwide and on WOSU-TV this Sunday evening at 11:30 p.m., so set your DVRs for that. Later on, we're going to talk with Dr. Charles Shapiro. He is the director of the Breast Medical Oncology at the OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center. He also has a deep interest in survivorship and the psychology of survivorship. We're going to talk with him a little bit later. But right now, I want to welcome John Kaplan. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne. It's a great pleasure to be with you today.
Let's listen to a cut from the documentary right off the bat. John, you talk about the unexpected diagnosis of cancer and how it changed your perspective about your profession and your purpose in life. Let's listen.
In my profession, photojournalism, cancer stories are the biggest cliche. But when you get cancer, you don't feel like a cliche. You just pray you can beat it. I'm learning that you've got to find strength you never knew you had and somehow forge a positive attitude, or your chances of surviving really won't be as good.
John Kaplan, you make the point early on that cancer stories are the biggest cliche when done by outsiders, but that when you get cancer, you don't feel like a cliche. What's the distinction there?
Well, that's right. And I mean, you know, as an experienced journalist and storyteller, in my career, I've not only edited, but, you know, I've judged contests that are about, you know, cancer stories. And journalists can sometimes fall into the easy trap of documenting people when they're at their lowest in life. I mean, even judging the Pulitzer Prize, I'd seen many cancer entries. So as someone who had never been sick my whole adult life to speak of, suddenly diagnosed with cancer, suddenly I had to find a way to cope with my fear. And one way that I coped with my fear was starting to photograph and shoot a video of myself. But I was very conscious from the beginning of, you know, if you're going to do this and you hope to share it with other people to help them at a time of great emotional crisis as well, what's the redeeming social value in it? And I realized right away that, you know, I hoped and prayed I'd be able to go into remission, and fortunately I was able to. I knew from an early, very early stage that this film could help other families coping with a cancer diagnosis as well. It's upbeat, it's life-affirming, and, you know, I purposely didn't make it to be edgy or disturbing. It's a film that, of course, it's serious. It needs to be. It doesn't sugarcoat anything, but it really helps people realize that so many cancers today are falling into the realm of chronic illness rather than death sentence. And when you hear that sinister word for the first time, it doesn't mean it's the end. You can beat it. It's treatable and very often beatable.
My guest is John Kaplan, photojournalist, filmmaker, and professor of journalism at the University of Florida. He is the subject of his own documentary film titled Not As I Pictured. It's being shown on PBS stations nationwide and on WOSU-TV this Sunday at 11:30 p.m. If you want more information on that, go to WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link for you on that. I was surprised as I watched the film when you made the point that you didn't actually start photographing yourself in regards to this or filming yourself until you had already started chemotherapy.
Actually, it was just before chemotherapy. Okay. I had a very complicated case. They thought they'd found the most common type of kidney cancer early. That's called renal cell carcinoma. But when doctors had me in the OR, they realized right away that I was not a urology oncology patient, as they thought. But they could tell even before the pathology was sent out that it was lymphoma. And that meant I was a blood cancer patient. Common blood cancers include various types of non-Hodgkin lymphomas or Hodgkin lymphomas, leukemias, multiple myelomas. So basically, I had to start all over again with all new doctors, all new treatment regimen, and a much, much more dangerous situation. So at that point is when I began the process of documenting my journey.
And it changed the journey by documenting it.
Yes, it did.
Well, of course, that's kind of a, does a tree fall in forest? Can you hear it? But, you know, I guess, it felt different.
Well, yeah, I think you make a good point there. You know, number one, if you would have asked me at that point a couple of years ago if anything positive could come out of a cancer diagnosis? I'd say, no, of course not. And yet so many positive things have. And we received unexpected help from so many people and places. And, you know, that's really been at the core for me to give away this film. You know, we're giving away 10,000 free copies online. There's no catch. Even shipping's free. If you or your family is touched by cancer in any way, you can get a free copy of this very life-affirming movie. So in terms of that's been a very positive force. You know, this is I've been driven as part of this humanitarian program we've begun to get the film out to people. On the other hand, you know, back to your other point, yes, you know, documenting your own story, which is something I never recommend to my students. I'm a professor at the University of Florida in communications. Documenting it, of course, it alters the reality, so to speak. But what was important to me was that, number one, I had to do what my doctors advised me in the quest to get well. And so as part of that, I didn't want the technical aspects of trying to make a film to impede that. So it's a very, it's a simple story. And even though, of course, it's got its serious moments, there's lots of scenes involving subjects such as family and faith to really make the film positive, approachable, and watchable.
Your children, you start the film out with your children. In fact, when I first started listening to the film, because I just had a copy of it made for me, I wasn't sure I was watching the right film at first, because I'm like, wait a minute, this is about adoption.
Yes, well, we felt when we edited the film and put it together, we thought that if people are going to emotionally invest an hour in, you know, yet another poor guy with cancer, why would I want to watch a film for an hour about cancer, for God's sakes? Then it was important to let people know who I was, you know, what the foundations of my life were and are. And, of course, without my family, I wonder how I could have made it through this process. I've got a wonderful wife, Lee, who is my primary caregiver, and two great kids, Karina, who was 4 at the time, and Max, who was 2 at the time. You know, having your family believe in you can be such an important part. And, you know, at the time and even now, all I could think of was I just want to be alive to see my kids grow up. And now that I'm healthy again, I still feel the same way.
You, as you mentioned, 4 and 2, your children were very young at the time. You tried to make a game, you show it in the film, of getting your hair cut, about why you were getting it cut, and then you invited them to go with you for the haircut. I was wondering why it was important to have them there and at that time.
Well, for a typical cancer patient, your hair will begin to fall out after your first chemotherapy in 2 to 3 weeks. Of course, it varies, you know, depending on the regimen. And that is, of course, it can be traumatic for the patient. I do think it's a little bit easier on men than women. In fact, I make a kind of a joke in the movie that I was just another 40-ish trendy bald guy, you know, during my chemo. Yeah. But in any case, you know, to a young child, to see their daddy suddenly going through a rapid physical transformation can be really tough. And so I wanted my children to be able to believe that I was there for them and I'd be there for them in the future. So they knew that daddy had boo-boos. They knew that daddy was in what they called the hostable for his boo-boos. And but I never wanted them to believe that I couldn't be there for them as they grow up. And so at this point, they're now 7 and 5. They know daddy made a movie about his boo-boos. I introduced the word cancer to them for the first time just this summer. And it's really neat because they know that daddy made this movie to help other people with boo-boos too. And they're big believers in the story.
How else did you keep them involved without scaring them or making them concerned that something had changed? Because just change can, they're very smart.
Well,
children are very smart.
you're so right, Anna. And, you know, what doctors will say, well, just try to live your normal life. And, of course, that's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. So what was so cathartic for me were everyday scenes like blueberry picking or blowing bubbles with family. I include those scenes in the movie to be able to show that you don't throw away all the beauty and joy you had in your life before you first heard that rough, tough word, cancer. You try to build on, you know, why do I want to fight it? What do I believe in? You know, what's most important to me in my life? And for so many, it often comes down to family and faith. So faith is handled in the movie in what I hope is an ecumenical way that, you know, you might think about you know, what do you turn to? And then, you know, family, whatever your family situation is, it's often a great source of support. It should be. And, you know, your family is what you want to fight for.
And your friends, too. You talked about your friend who's also going through cancer treatments. And you had another friend that you showed photographs she had taken of herself every day of the year or every day during her, from the time she was diagnosed. So you bring your friends into it. It's part of the family, right?
To some extent. You know, wherever you can find a support system, that's where you should look. And, you know, I didn't want to release this movie until we had an educational program built around it that could truly help patients, caregivers, and survivors. So I have partnered with the American Society of Clinical Oncology. They're called ASCO. That's the world's major organization of oncology professionals. They're the group that breaks all the important research every year that is making these diagnoses often so much more positive than they used to be. So we did focus groups with patients, with caregivers, with doctors, with medical students, and we wanted to look at underserved areas of cancer coping. Because, you know, when you're diagnosed, you can get great information about your specific clinical case. But cancer patients of all types share that important need to cope and to find support and to believe that they can fight their way back to normalcy eventually. So we found out that there were areas that patients and caregivers, for example, felt they weren't getting enough information on. And so partnering with ASCO, I waited to release the film until we could have an educational guide that goes with it. And we also have great educational links on our site, even in Spanish, that help with this process of cancer coping. So when people order the film free at notasipictured.org, or you can go to lovekillscancer.org, you'll get our cancer coping guide that goes with it.
And you can get to both of those links at WOSU.org/allsides and learn more about the offer. There's 10,000 DVDs that are going out, right, John?
Yeah, we've already given away almost 4,000. People naturally, the skeptics that we need to be, say, you know, what's the catch? And there is no catch. Even the shipping is free. We do sell it to organizations such as hospitals and medical practices. That helps us keep our other program goals alive. But for any individual touched by cancer, that would even include a doctor for personal use. The film is free, and it's truly helping people out there. We've got a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notasipictured, where patients and their families are also sharing their feedback on the film. That empowers other folks to actually have the courage to watch it. It is not difficult to watch.
And you can DVR it Sunday night at 11:30 p.m. It's going to be aired on PBS stations across the country and on WOSU-TV this Sunday evening at 11:30 p.m. So that's another way to get it for free. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Weekday mornings, prepare for the day with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne, and hear local news updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus. Thanks for joining us today.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, offering continuing education courses to update your creative career skills. Information and online registration are available now at www.ccad.edu.
Discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/allsides. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow Ann on Twitter at AnnFisherWOSU. You can also download podcasts from all the guests and topics. That's WOSU.org/allsides. And the program continues on 89.7.
Still with us is Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist John Kaplan. His documentary film, Not As I Pictured, airs on WOSU-TV Sunday night at 11:30 p.m. The film chronicles his struggles with a rare combination of cancers and how he survived it and his attitude at the same time. Joining us now also is Dr. Charles Shapiro. Dr. Shapiro is a professor of medicine in the Department of Internal Medicine at The Ohio State University College of Medicine. He is the director of breast medical oncology at the OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center and James Cancer Hospital and Solof Research Institute. He has a strong interest in cancer survivorship, and since 2005 has been a member of the American Society of Clinical Oncology's Task Force on Cancer Survivors. If you have a question or comment for either of our guests, we welcome them, as usual, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you want to hit the Facebook page, you can go there, or you can tweet us at Ann Fisher, WOSU. We do have another cut from the film that I wanted to get to. Let's listen to another scene. At this point, John Kaplan, you've been through a series of chemotherapy treatments and then an MRI to see how the chemo is working.
Today is the day that we see Dr. Lynch to get the results of my CAT scan. And hopefully it's going to show that the chemo is working. You know, I'm just trying to work through it. I'm facing my fear, finding the faith, and we believe it's working. It's going to be okay.
Energy!
You know, another thing that sometimes seems or sounds cliche is the idea of the positive energy. John Kaplan, did you ever, when, you know, looking from the outside in, think, well, that sounds good, but how could it be real? Did it feel real?
To me, it felt real because I received so much strength from my family, the energy of my young children, their love. And, you know, as I mentioned beforehand, they really helped me get through. And so, of course, you've got to do what your doctors tell you to do, but at the same time, your belief system is another important integral part in your care and in your healing. So as the American Cancer Society says, or Livestrong people say, Lance Armstrong's organization, you become a survivor the day you're diagnosed. And so those everyday family scenes, boy, did they feel positive to me because I needed them at the most difficult of times.
Dr. Shapiro, John Kaplan was talking earlier. He channeled his energy and his survival into his photo, documenting it and chronicling it with photos and of course, the film. Not everybody is a photographer or a photojournalist. There are other ways to do the same thing. And John mentioned some people said journaling at first.
So I think that it's a different prescription for everybody. But I'm fond of saying that to my patients, you got to maintain your own agenda. John successfully maintained his own agenda by photojournalism and making documentaries about his personal journey. And I think that I'm encouraging all my patients to find that thing that you consider special, you enjoy, and do it. Just happen to have cancer, and it's maybe difficult, but you should maintain your own agenda.
Jerry, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ms. Fisher and guests. I'd just like to relate that our son, who was 6 feet, 1 inches, and 190 pounds, lived down in Mariana, Florida, and he developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he told our daughter, he didn't say anything to us, but he lasted 6 months, but he saw on television this Cancer Institute of America, or North America, up in Northwest Illinois, and they even flew up there. But by the time he got there, they couldn't give him a bone marrow transplant, and he lived in, a town of about 6,000, Mariana, Florida, in the Panhandle. And I just think that had they been more knowledgeable in this small town, the doctors probably did all they could. He could have got up there in time. And by the way, I'd like to ask your doctor there if he's familiar with Dr. Samuel Epstein's work, The Politics of Cancer. And what my son did when he worked for $3.75 an hour, a company here in Columbus, was handle benzene without the employers requiring rubber gloves. He told our daughter this, who lives in North Carolina. And it just, I agree with, and I congratulate the young man who survived the cancer. That's wonderful. But I would like to know if the doctor, good doctor, has read Dr. Epstein's work. I don't know if Dr. Epstein's still living. This was published in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the book right here on my desk in front of me. But I'll take my answers off the air, Ms. Fisher, and thank you for the time.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for your call.
No, I haven't read the book. I don't know what it's about.
It made me think, John Kaplan, about who this film is for. It's not just for people who have been diagnosed with cancer. At least it didn't feel that way to me.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, in my belief system, our caregivers are our great saviors and heroes. And so the film is made for patients, for their caregivers, for survivors. And we've also learned through our focus group research that the film is seen as really having great opportunity in medical humanities education. So we've shared it with several groups of medical students, typically second-year medical students, fellows, working oncologists. And it's seen as a very important vehicle in this area that, you know, perhaps Dr. Shapiro can speak of, that's called medical humanism, also referred to as humanism in medicine. And basically that is to help medical professionals realize that, you know, you're not just treating a chart or a case, but a real human being with fears and issues and certainly hopes. So the film is seen as being a very positive force in helping to teach medical professionals to be more empathetic and caring.
Dr. Shapiro?
When we first meet a new patient, we have no idea about the context of their lives. When we establish a relationship over time, we get a glimpse of their context of their lives. But I have two points on that thing. That one is the decisions they make, the discussions they have with you, are influenced by who they are, the context, I call it, of their lives. And I want to relate to you one anecdote. I was on service 6 months ago teaching the residents and medical students and the interns in the hospital. And there was a guy, older gentleman. He was starting to get demented. He was confused. But his sister was with him. And I said, what did he do? What was his profession? And he was a Cracker Jack airline pilot, taught other people to fly. And that was an illustration, I thought, a powerful one, that there's a context to this guy. You see him as the older man, confused, and we formulate certain impressions about these guys, but yet he had a whole life predating that. And that was an important teaching point, I think, and speaks to the humanism in medicine.
Are there enough tools like this film out there for physicians who are coping with these issues? And it's a relatively new field in medicine to think about these things?
I would say no.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would say that that is an area that's been relatively recently recognized, and it's not about the medical agenda solely. It's about the context of your life, and we can do so much good, but we have to learn about people and what they need from us in treating patients beyond the chemotherapy.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about surviving cancer and how you do it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's not just about waiting out the treatments. There's a lot more that goes to that. And Madeline in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I have a comment. I wish to plug a program where I volunteer. And I knew very little about surviving with cancer until I started volunteering at this program. It's called the Cancer Wellness Program. It is at McConnell Heart Health Center, which is north of Riverside. And it's a great program for folks, I guess, either being treated or having had it in the past. And it's a whole exercise. There's exercise physiologists who do this assessment, and they monitor the folks, and they get to exercise at this state-of-the-art facility, and it's just really a wonderful, supportive place for folks who are either dealing with current treatment or have had cancer in the past. So I did listen to your program. It sounds wonderful. I'm going to try to stay up late and watch the...
Just DVR it.
I don't have DVR.
Oh, no. Well...
I'm a technological baby. Anywho, it just cancer. It's called the Cancer Wellness Program. It used to be free. It is a nominal fee now, but if anyone would be interested, the phone to contact the exercise physiologist Laura, in charge of it. It's 566-3880.
Well, we'll try to find a link and put it on the website too, Madeline.
Super. Okay? Thank you very much. I'll listen offline now.
Thanks for your call.
Yep.
You know, a friend of mine, John Kaplan, and Dr. Shapiro was lucky. She had breast cancer. She learned about Gilda's House, which is the legacy of Gilda Radner, who died of breast cancer some years ago. That was still is a big part of her life, is going to Gilda's House, going to the exercise classes, or volunteering there now herself. Dr. Shapiro, are there enough places like that? It sounds like what Madeline was describing.
So we have at James, we have a whole program of James Care for Life, it's called. It involves drumming circles, yoga, massage, and all the things that you might envision people would in their quest to maintain their own health and wellness.
John, it's easy to understand why a positive mental outlook would help someone cope better with the cancer diagnosis, just psychologically, but what do we know about whether or not it actually improves a person's chances for survival?
That's a very good question. One thing I'd like to add is the Gilda Radner charity is now, I believe, renamed the Cancer Support Community. They're at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Oh, good. I'm glad you mentioned that.
When you go ahead, you can go down our website. Again, just go over to lovekillscancer.org, not as I pictured.org will get you to the same place. But we've got resources for a lot of other wonderful organizations. And, in fact, we do screenings all over the country. It'd be great to bring the film to Columbus, where we'll have a community event where we screen the film. And then we have a cancer coping community forum afterwards with experts such as Dr. Shapiro there, for folks from local cancer advocacy organizations, and a couple of survivors like myself. So it makes for a wonderful evening. There's lots of places you can go to look for cancer support resources, but one place, you know, folks can start is right on our website.
Okay. We'll have that on our website at wosu.org/allsides2. So
now I ignored your question.
No, you didn't. I knew you were going to get to it.
One more time.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to understand just psychologically and emotionally the benefits of a positive mental outlook and that positive energy we were talking about earlier. But I was wondering what we know about how it actually improves a person's chances for survival, and what if there's a relationship, or is it just a correlation?
Well, that's a great question, and interestingly, there's a strong Ohio State link. When you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis and you're a patient or a survivor, you might be able to make the inference that stress can be a contributing factor in your survival. But again, for me, it was always an inference without the facts that go along with it. So somebody shared with me some research called the Stress and Immunity Breast Cancer Project at Ohio State, and that study found a direct link between stress and cancer. And after 11 years of follow-up, OSU researchers, by the way, I did not research this before this interview today, but it's such a great coincidence. Anyway, your researchers there at OSU found a 45% decline in breast cancer recurrence when patients had received psychological intervention.
Dr. Shapiro?
Yeah, that's true, and that's very promising that non-chemotherapeutic intervention that people can be taught has such a powerful effect. But I want to make another point, that is, it's the goal to have a positive attitude. But that turns sometimes to you don't have a positive attitude, you failing, and that your cancer is not going to go well. And I don't want to give that message. It's a fine line that you can negotiate, but we shouldn't blame people for not having a positive attitude and not the treatment.
In other words,
doesn't
blame them for the treatment not working.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can't pretend to put on a happy face. You should be true to your feelings.
Exactly.
We have an email from Sue. She says, I am 80 years old. I am a survivor of two mastectomies. Those surgeries were 30 and 31 years ago, before our sons were married, before seven grandchildren, before five great-grandchildren, before my husband's retirement and years of travel in our motorhome. We hear very little about life after cancer. It is great. John, how's life after cancer?
I'll parrot that exactly. Life is great. You know, you don't realize it, but as I say in the movie, when you go through something like this, the veneer is stripped away. You don't realize there's a thin veneer over your life, and perhaps you're upset that your brand of hair conditioner out of the, you know, 47 brands in the drugstore isn't there that day, or little things get you down. And you truly can realize what's important, what's worth fighting for, and what you can let go. So as a survivor myself, it, you know, it doesn't instantly wash away the little day-to-day hassles that we all face, but it sure makes it, it sure does give you a renewed perspective on making every day count. And, you know, I end my movie with, again, what might be seen as a cliche to some, but the movie ends with me saying, every day is a blessing, every day is a gift, my thumb is up, and I say that to myself even now, each and every day. It's just so true.
You're listening to John Kaplan. He's a photojournalist, a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist, filmmaker, and professor of journalism at the University of Florida. He's also the subject of his own documentary film titled Not As I Pictured. It's being shown on PBS stations nationwide and on WOSU television this Sunday evening at 11:30 p.m. You can also get a free copy if you want. Go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have both links to his website where you can write for a free copy of the DVD. Also with us, Dr. Shapiro. He is Dr. Charles Shapiro. He is director of breast medical oncology at OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center. He has a strong interest in cancer survivorship. He's been a member of the American Society of Clinical Oncology Task Force on Cancer Survivors. If you have a question or comment for either of our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, All You Can Eat Week continues with some food memories from food writer and editor Ruth Reichel. Also, why chopping onions makes you cry and how to fry the perfect French fry. Russ Parsons talks about the science of cooking. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Supporting our station is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at WOSU.org/sustainer, and as a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your member card will never expire. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at WOSU.org/sustainer.
Support for 89.7 comes from Outlook Media, publishers of Ohio's GLBT magazine, Outlook Columbus, and hosts of Central Ohio's alternative business networking group, Network Columbus, online at outlookmedia.com.
Join All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow at 11 for a discussion of suburban America, problems and promise. That discussion tomorrow morning at 11 on All Sides. Sunny skies today, a high of 84 degrees. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. What does it mean to survive cancer? We had an email from Sue, who said that there's not enough written about, and you don't hear enough about life after cancer, that it's great. Joining us today to talk about that, John Kaplan, photojournalist, filmmaker, professor of journalism at the University of Florida, also subject of his own documentary film titled Not As I Pictured. It's being shown on PBS stations nationwide and on WOSU-TV this Sunday at 11:30 p.m. Also with us is Dr. Charles Shapiro of the he's director of breast medical oncology at OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center at the James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute. John's talked a lot about his family, Dr. Shapiro, and they're lovely. I mean, in the film, it's a lot of great moments. But as you know, and I'm sure John does too, not everybody has that built-in wonderful support group. So what about them?
So I think that if you have a wonderful support group and you really rally together, that's great. But I think that a significant amount of patients don't have that, or the circumstances of the relationship between a spouse and a husband, two spouses, breaks down under the stress of cancer. Mm-hmm. So these are particularly challenging cases. We do a comprehensive approach. You can treat depression. You can refer them to a psychologist. You can refer them to a social worker. I mean, whatever it takes to get the patient through, but you got to know what the patient needs at that time. And, it's a different prescription for everybody.
When you're talking about knowing these kind of things, are you talking about maybe an assistant of yours knowing it or you personally as the treating physician knowing it?
So one of the things that we've done is a distress tool. So it's a 5 minutes of questionnaires. What are you distressed about today? And we use that as a guide to maybe psychological distress, refer to the psychologist or explore this. Financial distress. Well, we have referrals to financial counselors. So you get a snapshot in time about what the patient is concerned about at that particular time when you're seeing him as a guide to generating the referrals and the care they need. So that's one way.
John Kaplan, I got kind of a nice vibe from your treating physician. Was he on board as far as the documentary went? And what kind of interaction did you have with him about your case and about you?
Yes, well, my primary physician, my oncologist, is Dr. James Lynch of the University of Florida. And not only is he an internationally known oncology, blood cancer researcher, and top-tier physician, but he's also an expert in this area that I've been discussing of humanism in medicine. So this is where I learned about the topic. And so he has been supportive of the film goals from day one. We've been doing some events together where we do, cancer coping forums with a discussion with the audience. He's become a close friend. I know that's something that doctors, are sometimes advised not to do because you can't get too emotionally involved in each patient's case, of course. But he's a true, gem of a human being. And I've just been so fortunate to not only receive great medical care, and I would have gone anywhere in the country. Just so happens that here where I teach at the University of Florida, we do have a leading cancer center as well. But anyway, I would have gone anywhere. But I might have gotten the best medical care, but I didn't know how important it would be to also get, just the foundation of emotional support. And I do agree that, Dr. Shapiro is right. We sometimes can rely on our support system close by, i.e. family. And other times we've got to look for a support system elsewhere. That's why some of your local cancer advocacy organizations can really help you with support groups. There are ways to find support. In my case, as a lymphoma patient, the Leukemia Lymphoma Society has a referral service that was helpful to me. But it can happen that people around you often have trouble coping emotionally. I have a very good friend right there in Ohio who was diagnosed with breast cancer. And unbelievably, her husband denied that she even had cancer. He just couldn't be there for her. And of course, that was so terribly difficult for her. But she was able to reach out to other people in other ways. And right now, she is also a happy, healthy, survivor. Everybody's case is different, as Dr. Shapiro says. If you're having a tough time at home, and again, it's not that that person close to you doesn't want to be there for you. They might not themselves have the emotional skills to know how to cope with that fear that you might not be there any longer. But if you're having some challenges at home, you know, don't give up. You got to believe that there are other people in other ways that you can get the emotional support that can help you get through the process.
Paul in Blacklick, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on one of your guests, and his talking a little bit about positive attitude. And I have a little bit of a problem. My first wife died of breast cancer way back in the early 70s, and she was without a doubt the most positive person right up until the last second that you ever wanted to talk to or be around. When I hear people talking about, it's a positive attitude that really makes the difference and so on and so forth. And the other side of that coin is what they're not saying is that they're very close to saying that if you died of cancer, you didn't have a positive attitude. And that after almost 40 years, that still grates on my nerves when I hear it.
Yeah, Paul, thanks. I'm glad you called because we did talk about that a little bit, but it bears repeating. Dr. Shapiro?
So I think that the danger in that positive attitude, it's great for the people who can find the wherewithal to have it, but I think that it sometimes turns into blaming the cancer victim, if you will, or person that doesn't do well with cancer because she wasn't positive enough. And you know well that your wife was the most positive person you could ever imagine, and she still didn't do well. So I think that biology trumps, in some cases, biology is immovable by these emotional factors. And in some cases, it may be movable.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. There's something I would like to add to, mm-hmm. Paul. You know, number one, I'd like to say, of course, I'm sympathetic and sad to hear when somebody passes away from cancer. Having said that, there are now 11.7 cancer survivors in the U.S. alone, and that number is growing every year. They're making truly incredible medical breakthroughs, including this very year. I was at the ASCO convention in Chicago, where truly breathtaking research is happening, and that's increasing that survivorship even more. You know, some cancers, of course, are more survivable than others. It's very important to know that many cancers that would have been a death sentence even 15, 20 years ago, some might say my diagnosis could have fallen into that category, they're now being able to very often, not all the time, but sometimes fall into the realm of being able to be looked at more and more like chronic illness rather than death sentence. So I'm not saying that you should blindly have this rah-rah positive attitude and that's going to make everything okay. You have to rely on the clinical advancements and the great medicines that are there now and coming out all the time that can help in that quest for survivorship. But it's really a balancing act. You need the stellar medical care that's purely clinical. And yet, trying to forge a way and a belief system that can work for you, for many of us, it's issues of, say, family or faith. It can be different things for different people. It sure doesn't hurt. So please, Paul, I'm not trying to candy coat the very important issues that you raise. But just hearing that word cancer, it doesn't mean the horrible outcome that it did for many of us in years gone by. And when you see somebody who is bald from chemotherapy, even before I was diagnosed just a couple of years ago, I thought that meant that person was on their deathbed. And it doesn't mean that. It just means that that's when you're in the throes of that tough emotional roller coaster where that chemotherapy or radiation in some cases is taking you to the edge of trying to get rid of the so-called bad guys in your body and keep all the good guys that it can. And of course, it's tough. But, for so many people that go through that kind of chemotherapy where you do look like, you know, maybe people think you are about to die, your hair most often will grow back. And as I say in my movie, you can make it through to the other side, you know, back to the joy of the everyday.
And Paul and Blacklick, thanks for that call. And of course, we're very sorry for your loss. It's that was a long time ago. A lot has changed, Dr. Shapiro, as far as survivability.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we used to solely focus on cancer was so devastating that most people died 40 years ago. But now, breast cancer, for example, most people with diagnosed with breast cancer today would be long-term survivors. And that's a direct result of several things, but among them, improvements in treatment. So we are making progress. Sometimes the sentiment is that we're not making progress. Look at all the money we're spending. But it's incremental progress, but steady progress. And we know a lot more now than we did 10 years ago and so forth and so on.
What about the point that John Kaplan made about seeing cancer not necessarily as a death sentence, but more as a chronic disease?
Absolutely, that's true. A chronic disease, what is a chronic disease? Diabetes. It's managed. Sometimes it's more intense than other times. Sometimes it's problems, but other times not. But I think that the goal is, and we're realizing that goal, in converting cancer increasingly to a chronic disease that you can live with.
Ann in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Hi. I actually am going to say something as to this subject and then my regular subject. I think that one thing about the positive attitude that hasn't been touched on that I've heard is that it's not just to affect the cancer itself, is that the positive attitude affects your life day to day, and whether or not it affects whether you live longer or not, each day you're happier. And everybody, you know, can affect, help everybody. And for myself, I'm a patient at the James and the Gynecological Oncology. And I have a wonderful doctor who allows me to balance her medicine with alternative medicine. And I encourage other patients to look into that.
There's a lot. Thank you, Anne, for your call, and be well. Dr. Shapiro, there's a lot more talk about that, combining the two, and more open-mindedness, I suppose, on the part of the conventional medical community.
It's certainly true that many patients, and there have been studies on this, the prevalence of use of complementary or alternative medicines is really high. But I think that us traditionalists, if you will, don't know the value of any alternative medicine or complementary medicine. We just haven't done the studies, and there's no incentive to do the studies, that would prove that this alternative medicine contributes to this betterment of the cancer patient. So I have an open mind. Most of my colleagues have an open mind. I ask the patients to tell us what they're taking. We have a research pharmacist at the James that could sometimes figure out if there's an adverse interaction. There's a whole controversy about antioxidants and chemotherapy. Some people, they think that they help with the side effects of chemotherapy, but the flip side is there's some data in the lab that antioxidants can interfere with chemotherapy's action. So the word isn't out on that finally, but I think that increasingly patients are looking for something other than chemotherapy.
You know, John Kaplan, in the film, something that really helped me, you know, most people are afraid of treatment for cancer because we see people with the hair loss. We see the outward effects of chemotherapy and radiation. You really showed us some intimate details about what you endured and what it's like and kind of helped demystify it. Was that a goal?
Well, you know, when you're diagnosed with cancer, you didn't do anything wrong. You've got nothing to feel guilty about. And, you know, for me, as someone who's an experienced journalist who asks people to open up themselves emotionally, to have the trust to share their story with other people, i.e. viewers or readers, that to share their story as a way to possibly help others cope with what they're going through, whatever the issue might be, that's something I've routinely you know, done in my work. You know, my work is known for having intimacy and care and empathy in it. But it's a whole other question to do that with yourself. And so for me, the acid test was, am I willing to open up my own life? It's something I typically don't recommend. I'm a college professor. I don't think students should routinely or journalists should routinely do first-person stories for a lot of reasons. But in my case, I realized very early on that if I could go into remission, and of course I hoped and prayed that I would, that my story, our family story, could truly help other families going through a cancer diagnosis too. And so I shared it all. And yet when I made the movie, I knew that, you know, who would want to watch a poor sick guy for an hour? And so the movie, again, it's very positive. It's very life-affirming. There's even humor in it, although it doesn't negate the tough times, and they're documented in my own story. But when people watch this film, they tell us they universally feel better after seeing it. And they're sharing their comments up on our Facebook page. Again, it's facebook.com. Not as I pictured. That in turn gives other patients and families the courage not just to get a free film, but to actually stick it in the VCR, the DVD. And it's a good feeling. You know, it's part of my healing as well to know that our family story can help others through a very difficult time.
Dr. Shapiro, as treatments evolve, we just talked about all the advances that have been made. So does general knowledge of them. Are patients more sophisticated now than they have been? And does that help or hinder doctors? What's the relationship there on that level? So we have the internet.
The patient comes in with 40 articles, 10 of them you haven't read. So I'm being humorous, I think that a better informed patient is always an asset to the oncologist or treating physician. It's just they're more likely to ask relevant questions. They're more likely to understand different aspects of the treatment, and I think that it's good. I mean, I think that that would be my take on it.
John Kaplan, there are still, you said, about 4,000 free DVDs out there. Can you tell folks again where they can get them?
Sure. Other than checking your website, which I know you'll mention again, they can come over to either lovekillscancer.org or the name of the film, Not As I Pictured with a D.org. And you'll see a link right there. It says Get Film Shop. And it'll show you how to order a free copy. There's no catch.
Well, thanks for joining us today, John Kaplan, to talk about the film. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ann.
John Kaplan, a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist, filmmaker, teaches journalism at the University of Florida. He's also the subject of his own documentary film. It's called Not As I Pictured, being shown on PBS stations nationwide, including WOSU-TV this Sunday at 11:30 p.m. Also with us, Dr. Charles Shapiro, he's a director of breast medical oncology at the OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center at the James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute. Thanks for joining us today, Doctor.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.